It's Mary Derry Day, and we're going to have a party. We're going to remember all of the things that he gave to us. And the only real difference between this party and the one that Derry would throw himself is there's probably going to be more scotch left in the bottle at the end of it than there normally would be. Now, everybody in this room probably has a Derry Brownfield story or two or three or four or 5,000. And if we were to ask all of you to stand up and share your Derry Brownfield stories today, we'd never get to Domenico's. But I'm going to share a few stories this morning about Derry's broadcasting life that will just scratch some of the surface of their Derry Brownfield that we all knew. Maybe those of you with Derry stories should write them all down and send them over to Beth, who was the den mother of the Derry Brownfield show for 14 years. And she would love to have them and post them on the webpage or something, but the stories would be wonderful to hear and see. I think Derry Brownfield has probably already had a little conversation with St. Peter. And he has told him that heaven would be a whole lot nicer if they had more cows. And if Derry had a good horse. Except Derry wouldn't have told St. Peter he wanted a good horse. He would probably have said, I need a good horse. Do you think you can take care of that, Pete? He'd probably say. Derry walked into the newsroom one day of the Brownfield Network, and one of the staffers, a young man named Matt Gainwell, was sitting there eating a bowl of oatmeal. Derry walked up to him absolutely aghast and said, people don't eat oats, horses eat oats. And Matt and one of my other reporters, Travis Ford, always enjoyed hearing Derry talk about horses. This is National Agriculture Week. It's kind of appropriate, isn't it, that we tell some stories about an old dumb farmer, which is what Derry often called himself. Dumb like a fox, Derry Brownfield was. He was a farmer who talked on the radio. Unlike a lot of talkers on the radio, he didn't have a shtick. He didn't say stuff just to get people riled up. If somebody got riled up because of something he said, well, that's just the way it was, because Derry Brownfield was speaking his own mind. And boy, did he like to speak his own mind. Sometimes I'd pick up the phone, and the voice at the other end would say, Brown Derryfield here. And he'd be asking me some questions about something in the news that he wanted to talk about on his show. I met Derry in January of 1967 when I went to work at KLIK Radio in Jefferson City, and Derry had already been there a year or more as the farm director. His office was just down the hall on the top floor of a decrepit old building on Capitol Avenue. He shared it with the morning man, by a young man by the name of Alan Peck, whose folks ran a grocery store here for many, many years. I talked to Alan last night. He and Alan started the broadcast every day from 6 to 7 in the morning. Derry would do the farm news and the markets, and Peck would spin the records, and they'd chat back and forth on the air. Alan wants to say hello to everybody here in California, and he's in Dallas now. He especially wanted me to say hello to the Brownfield family. He remembered that Derry, who was a little bit older, was a star debater in California high school, which might explain part of Derry's later career. He remembers that he taught Derry some of the basic mechanics of radio broadcasting when he joined KLIK, and Derry was always in awe of Alan Peck. He said that Alan Peck was the only guy who could leave the studio, run around the corner to another studio, do a 30-second commercial, and get back within 60 seconds. He recalls that Derry once approached him about setting up a state farm broadcasting network. But about the time Derry wanted to get it started was when Alan left the radio station and went to Cincinnati, where he stayed a couple of years before he went to Dallas, where he's been now for 40. But Derry was associated with one of Alan's more embarrassing moments on radio. One morning, sometimes we had what we called the click-clock quiz, which was a call-in. You answer a question, you want a prize of some kind. And one morning, the particular question concerned something that Derry had mentioned in his farm program that morning. And Alan took a call from a young girl who had the right answer. And when Alan asked the young girl's name, she said, Lollipop. And Alan quickly responded, oh, sure, and I suppose your brother's name is Soda Pop. And she said, well, it is. And so Alan and Derry had a big laugh on the air about this. Until he got a call, one of the sponsors of the radio station was highly upset at the treatment of his daughter. The sponsor was Pop's Lawn and Garden Center. And their kids really were named Lolly and Soda. I guess the surprise is that somebody working with a farm director named Derry Brownfield would think that a name like Lollipop was odd. I told this story about Derry in a blog that I wrote last Saturday morning on our webpage. Derry used to do a 5-minute weather program from 7:15 to 7:20, just before I did the 7:20 sports on Click. And he once told me that he was always living in fear when he did the weather program, that he'd get his tongue tangled up and tell people that a warm air mass was a warm mare's ass. So he was pretty careful about that, and he never did make that mistake. I got in touch with some of Derry's other buddies in the last couple of days and asked them to tell me some stories. One of them was Jim Pierner, who worked with Derry when Jim was a kid at the radio station, now lives in Colorado, another place that Derry used to love to go. And he wrote back that he was disappointed that so many stories in the press since Saturday have focused on Derry's work with the Farm Network, and not enough about his work at KLIK. Jim said, "I worked with all the farm directors that preceded him going back to 1960. And he added a sea change of professionalism to what we did in farm news at KLIK. Jim was a college student during those years. He had Derry go up to the University of Missouri one day and speak to the Econ 51 class, the basic economics class, the honors class in this case. And he said, "I watched him bring the notion of ag econ and farm markets to life for those kids who knew next to nothing about the topic. He did it for me out of good cheer and good friendship." And he said, "I learned gobs from him and valued his wonderful friendship and good humor." Now, that friendship and good humor was severely tested once by Jim and Jerry Bryan, the news director of the radio station at the time. They were working one night in the newsroom a few hours after Derry, earlier in the day, had done a story about something the Secretary of Agriculture had said, with which Derry strongly disagreed, which wasn't exactly news then, certainly isn't news now. And Derry proceeded to read the riot act to the Secretary of Agriculture on the air, which wasn't particularly news then, and isn't particularly news now either. Except that night, while Jerry and Jim were working in the newsroom, something inspired them to cook up what they later called the practical joke of the century. Now, in those days, we had these big old clunky wire machines that used fanfold paper, not the single sheets like we have in modern printers today. And we also had an old Royal typewriter in the newsroom. The typeface on this typewriter was the same as the typeface on the printer. So they waited until the wire slowed down enough that they could spool off several sheets of blank paper. And then they fed it into the Royal Manual typewriter. And they created a fake United Press International story about the Secretary of Agriculture being mightily upset by some intemperate remarks made by some Midwestern farmer broadcaster. And then they left the paper there for Derry to find the next morning when he came in. And Derry was going through the papers from overnight that came in and saw various messages back and forth from various bureaus. Anybody know who this farm broadcaster is? Somebody says it's Derry Brownfield, okay, I like it. And he finally got down to what the Secretary of Agriculture presumably had said. And by the time Jim and Derry got in, Jim and Jerry Bryan got into the newsroom, he was in a state. "What should I do? How should I handle this?" And they said, "Well," he said, "this is legitimate news." Jerry Bryan told him, "It's, you have to report it." And then they told him, "You can't ignore it just because he disagrees with you. Reporting it is the ethical thing." So Derry quickly started preparing a response to this non-existent story. Jim went downstairs to run the board, and Jerry was putting together his own newscast. And Jerry had started his newscast at 6:05, which ended at 6:10, and Derry was supposed to start his program at 6:10. And so while Jerry Bryan was on the air in the news booth next to the studio, Derry came in with what he had written as his response to the Secretary of Agriculture, and he read it to Jim Pierner. And it was only then that Jim said, "Don't do it. The story's fake. You've been had." Derry's four-word response, in which he referred to Jim and Jerry as having some kind of relationship with a dog, was said so loudly in that booming voice of his that Jim was sure that Jerry could hear it through the glass in the newsroom. And perhaps the microphone picked it up, although they never found out. But he says it took all of Jerry Bryan's composure to keep from falling apart when the explosion came. These two also pulled another practical joke on Derry. At Christmas time, the station had a Christmas party, and they gave Derry a Whitman sampler, in which each piece was carefully foil-wrapped horse byproduct. Jim told me this week that Derry was such a pro and such a good sport. They had to be with those two. Despite all of his success with the Brownfield Network, he told me once that it just never was quite as much fun as those early mornings on KLIK when he and whoever the morning man was, whether it was Peck or Pierner or later Don Grady, and whether it should be Jerry Bryan or I would get together with him, and we'd go on the air from time to time and we'd just talk about off-the-wall stuff. I remember Derry and I once spent several days talking about privies. You don't normally hear that on the radio. Another time there was a lengthy discussion of owl gizzards. I don't remember what caused these discussions. But they would go on and on and on. We had the greatest time with them. The audience sometimes got involved and would call the station to share their comments with Jerry. When he finally started his own show, he had Jerry Bryan, the news director at Click, do the original show openings for the Derry Brownfield show. About 9 o'clock every morning, after all the pressing business was done, several of us would walk down the hill to the Medical Arts Coffee Shop and spend an hour or so sitting around the table with Dr. Charles Ford, a professor at Lincoln University, and Buell Backley, a lumberyard owner in Jefferson City, and Gideon Hauser, a funeral homeowner, and others. And we would sit around and have coffee or a soft drink and spend an hour discussing the world. Now, in truth, I have to tell you that most of us didn't do the discussing. Most of us did the listening. And we were kind of, I think, Derry's first talk show audience. In the early 70s, a young kid named Clyde Lear came to work for me in the newsroom. And he and Derry immediately became quick, fast friends. And in 1972, they went out on their own on a huge limb and decided Missouri was finally going to get the farm network that Derry and Alan Peck had talked about earlier. And we're going to broadcast about farming to the farmer and to anybody else who would listen, and they decided there was nobody better to do this than Derry Brownfield. It became an even more daring venture when the general manager of the radio station sawed off that limb they'd gone out on and fired Derry because he found out about this before Clyde and Derry could tell him what they were up to. Clyde had already left, and he had been one of the people around the table at the coffee shop this morning, and so was Buell Backley. And they turned to Buell, and Buell had some friends, Jack Murphy and Jim Wunderlich and George Stiles, who had some money. And so they put up the money, and on January 2nd, 1973, Derry Brownfield started broadcasting throughout the state of Missouri on 9 radio stations, being a farmer, speaking to the farmer about the farm. Before long, they'd expanded into other states, so they couldn't call themselves the Missouri Network anymore, and that's when the Brownfield Network was born. Derry didn't mind telling the story about the immediate impact they had on agriculture. One day, very early, he was doing the morning markets, and there was a snowstorm that was coming in from the west that closed the markets in Omaha, Kansas City, and St. Joe. And he mentioned it on the air, and he told people who had hogs to get to market, if they could get to market that morning, this was a day to go because the prices were going to go up. And they did, $3 or $4 that day. A few days later, Derry got a check from a guy for $100 because the fellow had heard Derry's talk and had taken his hogs to market, made a big profit, so he sent Derry $100 to thank him for it. For many years, they broadcast from a house on the Brownfield farm. You'd walk in the morning, and Verna was at the front desk in the living room, and Derry and briefly Gene Davis, and then for a much longer time, Don Osborne, would sit at the kitchen table and put together their programs and their market reports. A fellow named Jim Lipsey came to work as a salesman. He had an office in one back bedroom. Clyde had an office in another back bedroom. Later, after I moved from doing my first broadcast for the network out there downtown to do the Missouri Net stuff, Beryl Rosenmiller came in, and Clarice Brown came to work for us out of that office at House on Hill Road. In 1974, when we decided to put the Missouri Net on the air, my first day of work was at the Brownfield Farm Office doing farm news in Derry's place because he'd gone to the World Food Congress in Rome. And on one of his reports back from Rome, he told us that he had sat behind the Secretary of Agriculture, and I think he said he sat behind Vice President Hubert Humphrey. And I asked him, he interviewed them, and he said, no. He didn't even take a tape recorder with him. Derry was not one for technology. He would tell you what he'd heard. And you didn't have to hear the speaker actually saying it because Derry was telling you the truth. We'd wrap up the morning broadcast, and we'd often head down to Fern's Cafe in Jamestown for lunch. The place had great chili, good hamburgers, and pie. Derry loved pie from Fern's. It also had smoke that hadn't been blown out of the place for about 30 years. I often felt when I left Fern's that I needed to take a knife with me and scrape the smoke off. But we loved to go to Fern's. That was kind of a ritual, and Derry got into rituals. Later on, he had other ones. One of our employees, former employees, Kim Steiner, recalled just the other day that one of his jobs on Friday mornings was to go to Tolson's drugstore in Jefferson City and get a big bag of popcorn for Derry. And after we moved out to our present offices, Derry liked to get together with the folks late on Friday afternoons and go over to Domenico's, where they had peppermint ice cream and drinks and good fun, good fellowship, and a lot of talking. Well, for most of them, perhaps a lot of listening. Derry decided 29 years ago last month he needed some help for his Saturday morning broadcasts. And so he went after a couple of kids in college named David Pierce and Roger Gardner. Called up Roger one afternoon in Columbia, invited him out for dinner so they could talk. Roger recalled that they ate about a pound of shrimp, and then Derry ordered the steaks. And to tell you how backward Roger was at the time, he told me it was the first time he ever saw anybody pay for a meal with a credit card. He's come a little ways since then. But that whole job became an adventure for Roger Gardner and the start of a career that now has him as one of the top officers of Learfield Communications, and one of those who is now charged with keeping this company that Clyde and Derry founded going well in the 21st century. One summer, Roger lived at the old Brownfield house. Another summer, he lived at the Hall place. And he's with us now doing good, legitimate work. As for David Pierce, I'm sorry to tell you, David became a politician. He is now a state senator, and he's working on a bill, perhaps right now, on a bill, on a proposal that would let the state accept millions of dollars in federal money to pay another 20 weeks of checks to people who aren't working. Derry was a central figure in creating the nation's largest farm broadcasting network. He was the voice of it for 20 years before he started his own talk show and the Common Sense Coalition. As I said, he and broadcasting technology were never comfortable together. I don't know that he ever took a recorder anywhere and interviewed anybody. In his studio, he refused to have a digital clock. And if we had a digital clock, he refused to use it. He preferred these nice big old round analog clocks with the sweet second hands, you know, and the numbers and everything, with pieces of paper that he would scotch tape around the clock, reminding him where he was supposed to take his commercial breaks. Did he still have that clock back? Still had it. And he could work with those clocks, but he just couldn't figure out those digital things. He once told Matt Lear, Clyde's son, "I can write with either hand. I'm amphibious." To which which Matt responded, "Well, that means you can do it underwater." Derry didn't just talk the talk, he walked the walk. as a farmer and a farm broadcaster. He wasn't afraid of stepping in it on the air any more than he was afraid of stepping in it when he was walking across a pasture. He'd leave it up to his listeners and his critics to decide whether he was right. But he was never anything but honest in what he said, and quite honestly, he always thought he was always right. Now, he was probably to the right of the Tea Party, long before there was a Tea Party. But he was among the most liberal people you could ever meet when it came to friendship. I don't think Derry, like Will Rogers, ever met a man he didn't like. Although he did like some a whole lot better than he liked others. He simply enjoyed people, regardless of their place on the political spectrum. He loved to go out and speak to groups, always astonished me by the fact that he drove everywhere. Forget this flying stuff. Derry had these great big long Cadillacs. And when he had a speaking engagement two or three states away, he'd jump in the Cadillac and take off. And he didn't need notes to speak. He'd just get up and let fly about agriculture. And if along the way some corporation or some bureaucrat got in the way, then they just deserved it. He had little tolerance for the bureaucracy, especially the federal bureaucracy, which he often referred to as ignorance gone to seed. He liked to remind listeners on the air or from a meeting podium, I was born during the Depression, along with the dust, the drought, and the Democrats. And I heard him often remark that things have changed since I grew up. We went out to the bathroom and ate at home, and now we go to the bathroom at home and eat out. He remarked that if Derry owned a dairy, the slogan would be, you can whip our cream, but you can't beat our milk. But you know, it wasn't the radio studio or the speaker's podium that was the center of Derry Brownfield's life. It was the land. He loved the land. Several years ago, there was a young woman broadcast journalist from Berlin, Germany, who came to visit us for a week. And I tried to take her around and show her quite a bit of our culture, American culture, as well as talk to her about journalism and what we did. And one of the places I most wanted her to see was Derry Brownfield's farm. So one beautiful October afternoon, we came out to Derry's farm. And the three of us got into his pickup truck, and we went driving all over the farm. We looked at the animals, looked at the cows. We spent quite a bit of time up on a hill looking at cows. And we wound up at the cabin where Derry got me a Diet Coke and he got her a nice beverage made by those fine German brewers, Anheuser and Busch. And he mixed himself up with scotch and ice. And we sat out on the porch and he just talked to her about American farming, about American agriculture and the American reverence for the land. While we were out in the truck, we stopped on top of a hill. We looked out over the rolling farmland that stretched out to the river. And we just sat there for a few minutes and just looked at this gorgeous, gorgeous view. Now, I'd love to know what she told her friends when she got back to Germany. And I'd be interested in knowing what she remembers from that trip here. I bet you a dollar to a donut, the biggest memory she still has of that trip is that day on the farm, looking at Derry's cattle. And sitting on that porch and talking about the land, talking about American values of land, she learned something about the heartland of America, a phrase that Derry was always very proud of using. I don't know if life was ever better for Derry than when he was on a horse, working the cattle or sitting around on that porch of the cabin. He was independent as all get out. He was as contrary as it could be at times. He was opinionated, and he was your friend. Whether you embraced his opinions or not, he was entertaining, and he was committed to telling the people about agriculture in his own way. I never had a job that wasn't fun, he told me in 1992. One time he came across a picture that somebody had taken of him and a goat. And he said it was the only real good picture anybody ever took of him. It was about that time he did a story on goat meat, and he told people on the air that if they wanted a picture of him, they should send a letter, a picture of him and the goat, they should send a letter to GOAT, Summertown, Missouri, 65023. And by the time I talked to him, he already had about 50 requests for a picture. I was always interested in the fact then people could send a letter addressed to GOAT, Senator Missouri, and the post office would know to send it to Derry. Now, let's be clear. I'm not talking about Saint Derry here. He could be irritating and irascible and not especially as judicious in some of his comments as others might prefer. Some people have said he even was a little bit mean from time to time. Roger Gardner told me yesterday there are many words to describe Derry Brownfield. Could he be annoying and stubborn? Boy, could he be. But at the top of the list for me is generous. And he went on and he said, most people, I think, knew Derry only by what they saw in his public persona. Often it seemed he was giving a speech, even when it was just the two of you. But what few got to see was something more. Beneath all the jokes, rants, and hot air was a very kind and generous soul. He was a successful man. He was known to tens of thousands of people. But you know, I'll bet that battered old Stetson over there is the same size as it was before Derry became a star on the radio. Sometimes Derry brought eggs to the office for our staff. They were brown eggs, of course. One day, this kind and generous soul got on the intercom and issued forth a rant. Hello, folks, some remember him saying. I've been bringing farm fresh eggs for some of you, and I've noticed some of you are putting them in the refrigerator and then forgetting them. Folks, you don't have to refrigerate farm fresh eggs. Leave them at your desk and take them home. They won't go bad on you. And one of our folks remembered this morning that Derry lectured the egg-taking staff for about 5 minutes on the internet. But you told me he was just a good old boy talking to you, and that's why he was so charming. So he was the real, the whole total package, wasn't he? I'll remember his laughter, I'll remember his joy of living and the fun of knowing somebody who was unapologetic about being his own man. He used to joke about the party that people were going to have on Berry Derry Day. When the great baseball player Mickey Mantle died in August of 1995, his somber funeral at a Dallas church was on TV in the Missouri Net newsroom. When Derry strolled through, actually striding through, maybe 10 seconds he stopped to watch this, and then he announced, now, when old Dummyfield dies, y'all don't do nothing like that. I don't want a bunch of people crying and sad music. Get some horses and some scotch and have a good time. So he's probably up there right now thinking that all of this is nice. But let's get it over with so we can get on with the good stuff. And we all know that arguing with Derry Brownfield about that or anything else was probably not the best use of our time. So St. Peter, go get those cows. Because you don't want Derry Brownfield broadcasting all over heaven that you don't have cows. While you're at it, make sure that Derry has a good horse.